The Secrets of Star Wars is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Hello there. Obi-Wan Kenobi here, also known as James Arnold Taylor, the voice of Obi-Wan,
Jedi Master Plo Koon,
and many other characters in the world of Star Wars. You're listening to... Shh, don't tell. It's the Secrets of Star Wars. May the Force be with you.
Hello there.
It's a power that Jedi have that lets them control people and make things float.
Impressive. Every word in that sense was wrong.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
This station is now the ultimate power in the universe.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
It's against my programming to impersonate a deity.
That's not how the Force works.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force, and I fear nothing.
Remember... The Force will be with you, always.
You're listening to The Secrets of Star Wars, where we talk about everything connected to that galaxy far, far away. From movies to books, TV shows, and more, we're looking at the deeper themes and meanings found in the Star Wars universe. And today, we're discussing Episode 7 of Skeleton Crew. We're going to be in so much trouble. I'm your host, Patrick Mason, and joining me tonight on the panel is Boatswain Thomas Salerno. How are you, Thomas?
Well, I really shouldn't try this pirate voice given that I'm fighting a cold, so ahoy, mateys. Pardon the frog in my throat.
Yar, it'd be that time of year. Well, be sure to follow The Secrets of Star Wars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, your favorite podcast app, or on the StarQuest YouTube channel. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, on X, where we are at SQPN, or on Instagram, where we are at StarQuest Network. And be sure to get your official Secrets of Star Wars gear at sqpn.com/merch. So, let's dive into the penultimate episode of Skeleton Crew. You want to do the recap? We'll do general thought. What are your general thoughts so far? And then we'll do the recap.
Okay. So far or just this episode?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, so far I'm definitely enjoying the series. I am curious as to how they intend to wrap everything up in one more episode. I've noticed that that's a pattern in contemporary Star Wars where but by the time there's like the series or season finale is coming up, I'm like, they have a lot of loose ends to wrap up here. And then they always surprise me by usually pulling it off. So we'll have to see. I was disappointed we didn't get more of a, because I had heard rumors that this episode in particular would be a Jod backstory episode. And we didn't get that. So I'm really, really curious about his backstory even more after this one. But yeah, I think that this episode did a lot to, you know, hype me up for the finale, and I'm ready for it. Let's go. Do I really have to wait until Tuesday? Is this terrible?
Yeah, that's exactly what my kid said. Wait, we got to wait a whole another week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed this episode. I would say it, loose ends is not the right word, but it answered a lot of the questions, especially concerning AT-AT and the barrier and that kind of stuff. And it also, I don't think it posed any new questions, but it hinted at the answers to some of the questions we've had since the beginning.
Right.
And kind of puts the center stage on who the supervisor is and what's going on there. That appears to be what our main, I think, question to be answered is going to be. And then, you know, you have kind of the follow-on questions, Jod's backstory, what happens to AT-AT now that the old Republic is gone, the Empire is gone, and now there's a new Republic. Like, what do they do now? So I'm very curious as to all of that stuff. And I think this was a good episode moving the story along. I never felt like I was bogged down or I felt like, you know, let's get moving here, people. Kind of a deal.
No, this was definitely one of the more fast-paced episodes. Yeah, I was never bored during it.
All right, so Wikipedia says about this episode, the parents send a transmitter into outer space and are busted by the security droids. The pirates arrived at Ad-Eden at the same time the Onyx Cinder does, resulting in the latter's capture. The pirate Glurb is sent into the barrier, but his ship is destroyed by its defenses.
Wait, that dude had a name?
He had a name, yeah.
I'm sorry.
I think he's the saving up for a fish farm or some kind of farm in John's speech.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So he gets named then. I think that's where he gets the name. So it hurt a little bit when his ship didn't make it through. But then again, he's a pirate. Yeah. Realizing that the Onyx Cinder is the key to bypassing the planet's defensive barrier, Jod kills Brutus when the children incapacitate him, resumes his former captaincy, and tells the pirates to conceal themselves until he obtains the location of the planet's vaults. The children manage to use the pirate code to get SM-33 to turn on Jod so they could escape, but Jod stows aboard the Onyx Cinder, decapitates SM-33, which was like the saddest scene ever, and threatens the children into silence. As the security droids question the parents, the supervisor is heard announcing the arrival of Republic emissary. Jod poses as the emissary to gain access to Ad-Atten's vaults before he can meet with the supervisor. The children are briefly reunited with their parents before Jod approaches them with his lightsaber drawn. Dun, dun, dun. All right, so let's start off with thoughts about the parents part of this. And kind of the message in that whole scene.
I liked it because it was short. I've always been more interested in what the kids were doing. Whatever. and I was just like, oh, okay. But no, all kidding aside. Yeah, I like the tenacity of these people, you know, that they are determined to keep trying. I mean, you know, if I had kids, if these were my kids, I would hope I would be as tenacious as these people. You know, they should have made sure they were not followed. I'll say that. But, yeah.
Right. We finally have I've got a bad feeling about this.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Just the droids light them up. You know, it's been interesting to me to see these vignettes into the parents and what they try and do on this planet, because in my mind, it's always been a very 1984 kind of vibe.
Yeah.
To Ad-Atten and what's been going on. And the most interesting thing to me is that the droids never went into like lethal mode. Right. They're always just stunning the parents. There is no, you're breaking cardinal rule, like number one, which is no going through the barrier, communication through the barrier, right? The barrier is sacrosanct, but even that doesn't cause them to go into Terminator mode, right? They stay
light. Yeah.
They just stun the parents in the most hilarious relay race ever.
Yeah. They do manage to get that buoy out, though, which was good. I thought for a second that they'd all get stunned, but
yeah.
And I forget whether I saw this on our Slack channel or on Discord, but somebody made the point that the buoy kind of reminded them of the spaceship from E.T.
It does. Yeah. Like I had been thinking that that's like a tiny little ET ship.
And it's
a mini ET ship.
And that's an also kind of a neat Easter egg, because it's like it's the reverse. They're not calling home, they're calling out into the universe.
Yeah. I'm calling out to bring them home. Well, and I liked the messages too. The mm-hmm. the focus on, you know, we love you and we just want you to come home. And
yeah,
I like the fact that Wim's father apologizes, you know, I'm sorry I didn't listen to you. And Fern's mom is, you're not in trouble.
Yeah. I liked what Neil's mom said, you know, like your brother lost a tooth and got his you know, something from the tooth fairy or something. They didn't say the tooth fairy, but basically, you know,
yeah,
he got something because he lost a tooth, but then said like all he wants is his big brother to come home. And I'm like, oh, that was sweet.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so I enjoyed that. I think it's, you know, now that everybody's together, I think that's why one of the reasons we're going to get the supervisor. But I really enjoyed those little throughout the episodes window into the lives of the parents and what they're trying to do. And you kind of get a feel for what sort of dystopian, you know, planet they're on. And honestly, it feels slightly less dystopian every time. Like I get to see more of it, but I don't know. Right. We'll see when the supervisor shows up.
Yeah. I like how, like,
you know, back with the kids. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no. I like how they're still trying to argue with the droids, and it makes, you know, it still makes no dent at all in their programming, you know, like they're like, you know, you wouldn't listen to us. And like, we are always here to blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, ugh. And that's what you get to hear the voice of the supervisor, who just sounds like normal, generic bureaucrat voice. But we'll see. Maybe the supervisor is also a droid. I don't know.
And see, that's been, I know there's a lot of speculation about, and I'll save my wild speculation till the end. We'll wildly speculate. But yeah, I think there's a lot of people who think maybe he's a droid. But yeah, and that's interesting because that's the first time we get to hear his voice. And so we know it's definitely not one of the children's parents at that point.
Yeah.
And it's also, I also find it interesting that when you hear him, he talks about, you know, it's a Republic emissary arriving for a shipment and all non-essential work is canceled. And so I'm trying to think of like what does that mean? Is that like on a banking planet? I mean, do they work banking hours? They get all the banking holidays. but what, you know, I guess it's just really important when these things happen. And on top of that, you have where the landing zone is. There doesn't seem to be any cognizance amongst the citizens that, oh no, this is actually a landing pad.
Right. Yeah. When the ground arcs up, they're all sort of running away.
Right. And that the robots, please step away for your own safety.
Well, droids. I think that's because like they haven't had an emissary arrive in who knows how long. Right. So it's like maybe before a lot of these people were born. So then maybe they don't even know how this works, you know?
Yeah. Yep. So we have I thought it was interesting, the scene with Wim on the Onyx Cinder as they're traveling back in hyperspace. The other three kids are all playing like, this is the best thing ever, and we're playing games, we're going home, and Wim is like, man, our adventure's over. This is awful.
Yeah, it reminded me of what he was like before when they were going to go home. And he's like, but our adventure is being cut short. I don't want to go home, you know, but now it's more like it's sinking in where he's like, it's going to go back to normal. And also we're going to get in trouble. And I still have to take the stupid aptitude test. So it's like everything's kind of sinking in that, you know, he would rather not go back to like he's kind of the opposite of Bilbo Baggins, who just wants to get back to his quiet hobbit hole and smoke his pipe and read books and eat seed cakes. And, you know, whereas Wim just wants the adventure to keep going.
Yeah. I like how he it's funny because it's very much a. You know, I don't want to go back so much that I wish it didn't happen in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, I wish yes, I never pushed that stupid button, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Neil's response, I love Neil's response. No, it was great. Half the time I was about to die.
Yeah. That was a great line, yeah.
But you do, you get that feel from Wim, like he just like, he does not want to live the Ataten life.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of going back there is the most terrible thing. But it's just funny because two episodes prior to that, he has a breakdown about the fact that like the adventure is too much and he's never going to see his family again. And, you know, there's this interplay within Wim about, you know, it seems that way, you know, he's a kid.
Yeah. But,
you know, what's the important thing here? Is it the being out on an adventure or being home with my family and the struggle to kind of reconcile both of those within him? And, you know, it's a very childlike grasp of the situation, but I think it's also something, you know, all of us sort of deal with, especially, you know, if you happen to have a job that puts you out long periods of time, if you're in the military or, you know, oil worker or salesperson where you're out on the road a long periods of time, sort of like there's the adventure of going and doing your job, but there's also the man, it sure is nice to be home.
You're right. Yeah.
So we get, I think we get the first vision of the barrier from the outside. From the frigate, right? The pirate frigate.
Yeah.
Brutus. What did you think of Brutus as like as a captain?
Indecisive is what I thought of him. Like, and not able to control his crew very well. Like, this is skipping ahead a little bit, but when he's trying to have Jod forced out the airlock, he doesn't just do when his crew are wavering, he doesn't just go over and do it himself. He just keeps saying, space him, space him. And I'm like, just do it. Like, there is no reason he should have let Jod keep arguing with him. He should have just killed him.
Yeah.
So I find Brutus to be a, you know, like, he may have the brute force, but he's not as clever as Jod. Jod definitely outwits him at every turn.
Yeah. But he's got that, I mean, his name, right? Brutus?
Brutus, like it just, yeah.
The show is kind of making no bones, whereas, you know, Captain Silvo, you think like Silver Tongue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that conversation where I think they're going up to the Onyx Cinder and Brutus tells him, you know, treasure or not, I'm still going to kill you the first chance I get. And Silvo just says, I think it's a bad idea. The crew really loves me. And Brutus is like, you know, they love treasure, they love bounty or treasure. And Silva's like, no, they love me. And it's an interesting view. Like, we get a lot. I think we get a lot of Silvo in this episode.
Yeah.
Kind of how we got the kids in some of the previous episodes. We get a lot of him and who he is.
It's interesting that he thinks the crew loves him. And I'm like, do they really? I'm like, yeah. Following someone because they're charismatic and they can convince you of something is different from, like, you know, really caring about them as a person or loving them, you know, like I think he may be deceiving himself a little bit there.
Well, and that I think goes into maybe his sort of internalized rationale as to what love is, right? He mm-hmm. might view it as merely an accolades, or they'll do what I tell them to do without me having to kill one of them, kind of a thing. And you know, that's not what love is, right? That's
yeah,
sort of a pale shadow. But for like charismatic pirate captain, I guess that maybe that's the best you can get.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was interested to see the barrier from the outside, because I'm like, I guess maybe I'd forgotten. I'm like, it's not just in the atmosphere or right above the atmosphere of the planet. It forms like a shell around the system, seemingly. Like, it's like a Dyson sphere, almost, mm-hmm. made out of this gas and whatever that is. I don't know how they made that, like, in universe, but that's pretty yeah. impressive. And it's got the defense grid inside of it with these satellites that, you know, zap your ship and blow it up with electricity.
Yeah. Yeah, because the only view we get of the barrier prior to this, I think, is that first episode where they go through it from the inside.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just a bunch of green that suddenly turns into the star field.
Mm-hmm.
And then you find out they've never seen stars, which is, you know, still mind blowing. And then seeing it from the outside is sort of it's almost like you have Jupiter, and then inside of Jupiter, you've got the Earth. Like, there's right. this thin layer of cloud. But I thought it the exact same thing. I'm like, it's almost like these satellites are maintaining this atmosphere in a shell, you know, a spherical shell. And so my brain is like, how is it doing that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What kind of space magic are they using to make this happen? Because, you know, I guess interstellar gases in nebula don't really work like clouds in atmosphere, but that's what we got, was kind of a clouds. They're going through like a storm, like a hurricane or something, with right. these lightning generator satellites. And then, but then you get through it and you're back into open space before you get to the planet. And so, yeah, it was very curious to me, because I just assumed it was like right around the planet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Once you go through, you have this open space with the planet in the middle. And like the Brutus and the other pirates seemed like a bit naive to think, oh, look, it's just a cloud of stuff. I'm like, interstellar nebulae don't like form a sphere mm-hmm. like that. This is clearly an artificial structure, guys, as Silvo points out, you know?
Yeah. Well, like, he's like, how stupid are you? Like,
right. Yeah. That was good. Yeah. How stupid yeah. are you, Brutus? Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, he deserves that. Like, cause this is obviously something weird. And then it just, and Brutus is like inability to think, oh, I'll ask the droid that knows all this stuff, instead of yeah. just, it's just this very one, you know, single-minded, we got to space Silvo, and then I want to move on with my life. And you're like, I just feel like there's more. I mean, if you had like what AT-AT turns out to be, I feel like you'd go for it just a little more than Brutus seems to want to.
Right. It's almost like he's doing the bare minimum to keep to the pirate code of, like, you know, why he didn't space Silvo before. And like, and so, because he really doesn't want Silvo to be right. And so because that would undermine his position. So he's just doing the bare minimum he needs to. He's like, and at every turn, he's just like, oh, I guess it's not real. Let's go home, you know? Like,
yeah. Let's shoot him out of an airlock.
But then again, like I said, he's not decisive about it. He doesn't just do it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's and like John said in a previous episode, you know, he makes a good first mate, but not a captain.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think John's probably right on that one. You kind of want a first mate who has like a dogged no pun intended, you know, determination to do what he's ordered to. And it does seem like without having those orders, Brutus is kind of just, yeah, too indecisive to really lead the pirate crew. Because it doesn't really take much for Jod to take back over.
No, yeah. He just tells them, you know, Brutus was a stinking, backstabbing mutineer. Anybody want to join him? And everybody's like, nope.
Yep. And it almost seems like Brutus, like, begs for his life. Not quite.
Mm-hmm.
But he does, right before he gets shot, he says, you know, he's like, he says Silvo, mm-hmm. and it's sort of in that tone of voice, like, you know, wait, let me plead my case here.
Mm-hmm.
And
he knows that Silvo has him at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And that if he were in Silvo's place, he'd do the exact same thing.
Right. And I thought it's interesting that the kids end up being Silvo's way back to the captaincy, because mm-hmm. by, you know, incapacitating Brutus, it gives him the chance to just off him and then take the crew back. I kind of wonder, like, if you put yourself in the crew spot, what are you thinking?
Right. Yeah.
So we're back on the Onyx Cinder. And the kids get the message and they get threatened while they're listening to the message. But then, you know, they're like, we need to retake the ship. And
oh. Yeah.
Fern is like, we need to come up with a plan.
And Wim's just like, attack.
Oh. And immediately gets, you know, put down their attempted mutiny. But then we get another entrance of the pirate code. And Smee's seemingly unwavering commitment to it. And I really do find that interesting about Smee. This whole scene is it to me, because you have Smee explaining to Silvo, you can't be captain of two ships per the code. And so Silvo says, you know, puts his hand on Wim's mouth to keep Wim from saying it.
I'm the captain, yeah.
And then what does Fern say? I've watched it a couple times and I can't get it exactly, but she calls dibs, like emissary dibs, I want to say. Or is it dibs on being the Republic emissary? And yeah. I'm trying to figure out, remember exactly what she said there.
Oh yeah, you're right. And now I'm not remembering it correctly. She says, like, yeah, I can't, I should have watched it again. I can't remember. Yeah.
But she calls
whatever
dibs.
It was. Like, yeah, she says, I call, you know, claimsies on this ship. Was it because they found it? Like, kind of a finder's keepers?
Right, and she, like that, paper. That's what she does, I think, in the first episode, when they're, you know, the two boys go there, and the two girls are there, and then they're looking at the porthole, and you know, they're, oh, one of us has to call claimsies, and Fern calls it first to make it her ship, and then does it again. And it's what's interesting to me is Smee, you know, Silvo kind of issues a bunch of orders about having them chained up and, you know, removing whatever it is from the ship, from the Onyx Cinder, and putting it on the frigate so that they can go through the cloud or the barrier. And then, you know, Fern makes her declaration and nothing happens right away. And Silvo Sylph was like, that's not how it works. And then Smee punches the lights out.
Oh, that was great. That caused me to crack up. Yeah. And then he's like, you know, like he says, like, Yar, you know, it may be, but it's close enough. And I'm like,
yeah, I think Smee, you kind of get this feeling that Smee is kind of taken to the kids. Like it's one of those where he's gone a little bit beyond just the simple pirate story. I can't even say simple pirate story because that doesn't make any sense. But, you know, this kind of simplistic pirates droid. And now he's kind of his own man in a little bit of a way because he's more or less, I don't know how the pirate code works. I don't have it like memorized, but it kind of feels like he's playing a little fast and loose with it here. He's, you know, because that's what he says. He's like, close enough.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe like, well, maybe that creature in his head ate so much of his wiring that like he doesn't have to like he can start making his own decisions or not. Like that, it was almost like a glitch where he's like, oh, I'm not going to obey the pirate code this time, you know, to the letter because my brains are already scrambled from this thing making its nest in my head.
Yeah, the little four-eyed rat thing. Which. Later on, when Jod cuts Smee's head off and the rat crawls out, I almost thought we were going to see Jod step on the rat. Like, yeah. I thought that. I was like, oh, no. He steps beside it. I'm like, oh, thank goodness.
Because he didn't want to get his shoes dirty.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've seen decapitated droids before and they've still been brought back to functionality. So. I have my hopes up for Smee. And so so they take the ship back and they leave and they're out and they head to the barrier. And that's where we get to see, because we saw a little bit inside the barrier with Glurb flying through it, but it's not much before he gets, you know, zapped to cinders. And we see the other two pirate snub fighters going after him. And they get blown up. But you get that one back shot of the satellite turning green as the Onyx Cinder flies by when the kids are like, oh, it's an Ad-Atten ship. Which I feel like Smee had explained that earlier, but
He said that that was the genius of Tak Renad. He said he stole one of the Mint's own ships to make it through the barrier.
Yeah.
Although maybe that explains why they found it all crashed and banged up, because like, because he had put the extra armor and junk on it. So maybe by doing that, the satellites didn't recognize it as friendly and so attacked it.
Yeah, but that's a good question, because that is one of the still open questions, is why did the ship crash if it's an Ad-Atten ship?
Yeah. Although, like, but I would figure, like, they would use a transponder for you know, recognition friend or foe thing instead of being a visual confirmation.
Right.
Because, you said, they mentioned transferring whatever it is onto the frigate. So, yeah, so I don't know. There's still open questions here.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you figure it would be difficult to make a visual confirmation on a ship in a giant storm cloud that you're creating somehow. I would have figured transponder too, but again, the ship, like when it lands, you tell very quickly this was like custom made, right? Because the landing gear just locks into the landing stilts, and I mean almost just fastens the ship right down to the landing. I have a feeling we saw that because it's going to be important in the next episode. It's going to try and take off without proper clearance. It's going to rip the stilts off, but.
Oh, wow.
So what do we think of Captain Silvo's reveal? That he was stowed away and he takes the ship over.
That was when I lost any real sympathy for him at all. I was like, yeah, you're just a bad guy, you know. Like, you know, it's like he's not that. I remember last episode we were talking about, like, will he or won't he have a redemption arc, and I'm pretty solidified in no, he's not going to, you know, like. And I think that moment with the kids where he's being really cruel to them, you know, I'm just like, no, I'm like, this is not your smuggler with a heart of gold character. He's just a pirate, you know. And it kind of stripped the veneer of kind of the romantic image of the pirate a little bit away from him, that, you know, underneath he's just cruel. He doesn't care about anybody but himself and getting credits. You know, he threatens to hack the kids' parents up right in front of them. So,
yeah,
I'm like, yeah,
bit by bit, okay. like very explicitly. Like,
yeah. Mm hmm.
Bit by bit, little by, you know, slowly in front of you, mm-hmm. kind of a deal. It does. It completely strips away any sympathetic qualities he had from the beginning and any sort of thought that he might have. I mean, I guess it would be possible for him to have a redemption arc, but not in one episode.
No, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, he could have, you know, the betrayal scene we get, I want to say episode 5, you've got a lot to learn about pirates. You know, you have enough time in a show to round out from that or to come back and have a redemption arc. But doing this, like this very cruel, like, and he doesn't have to do it this way, right?
No, yeah.
He could have very simply somewhat reverted back to the original plan, you know. Which is, hey, I'm going to bring you kids, you know. I mean, it strikes me funnily. I feel like if you were really ultra charismatic and silver tongued as you appear to be a lot of the time, or as intelligent, I figure, you know, Crimson Jack would have been like, see, I told you I would get you home and let's get you down to the planet and back with your parents. And then we'll talk about my, you know, good reward at that point, mm-hmm. you know, just go back to that. But he doesn't. He just takes this. I'm a pirate and I'm going to take and get what I want. And the interesting, you know, because we know what's waiting for him on the planet, all these security droids and the sort of the mechanism of the world itself. You know, you kind of find that hole where he's explaining to them, don't tell anybody and whatever, kind of laughable.
Yeah.
But from the kids' perspective, they might not see it that way. Mm-hmm. I give that Catherine credit because she said he's always given her the creeper vibes. And that is a creeper tactic right there.
Yeah.
Is telling the kids that they'll be in trouble if they tell, you know, on him. That they have to stay silent or he'll hurt their family. And yeah, it takes away like any sympathy for Jod at that point. You want to see him lose at that.
Yeah. That's despicable, you know? Yeah. And you're just like, okay, you know, I want to see you get the classic villain death now.
Right. Right. And it's such an interesting turn because you go from the very beginning of the series. Literally, the first scene is when he's deposed as captain, mm-hmm. and there's a built in sympathy there for you because you know he was just trying to, you know, plunder like a good pirate, and he just, you know, got unlucky and lost his ship, and the, you know, some of the other shipmates you meet along the way are like, you were the best captain, you know. Still going to turn you in, but
yeah,
Yeah, and you know, you get the compared to Brutus as just this, you know, this brute force character who has no real captaincy ability, and you're like, you're kind of rooting for Jod for a while, and then it slowly erodes, and then this scene just like takes it all away.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if we're ever going to circle back, and this just came to me, if we're ever going to circle back to the fact that Kim told KB she could contact her whenever she needed. We have not circled back to that yet.
That's true. I really wish we had.
Yeah.
In the trash crab episode.
Yeah. Because I'm like, that. See, like, there's an open there to get. Because, like, Kim seems to have some sort of relationship with the New Republic where she can call them for help. So it's almost like there's an in there to get to bring the X-Wings back and get help, you know? So we always have to have that nice Star Wars ending where the X-Wings come and save everything.
That's right. Yeah. Like they do.
Like they do.
And that might be it. Like, I think, you know, because at some point you figure they're going to hook back up with the New Republic. Either, you know, Ad-Atten's going to get, you know, destroyed by the pirates and have their 1,139 vaults worth of Old Republic credits stolen. Or they're going to hook back up with the New Republic somehow. Or it's going to stay like it is. Some, like, they'll defeat the pirates and then stay hidden. I don't know. Like, that's,
yeah.
But you're right. I feel like Kim could be used as a definite way to bring the New Republic into the show.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if, like, have them show up, you know, Deus Ex Machina at the very end. Yeah. Which, it's not entirely what it would be, because the lead was buried, you know, 5 episodes previously, but it's still there.
And this show has been good with setting things up like that. Like when, in a much, much earlier episode, when Jod takes the knife from the dead pirate and then he uses it later in his betrayal scene in the treasure room. So this show has been good with planting those things, making you forget about them, and then they show up later.
Yeah. Well, and I like how you find out that knife was used to betray, you know, Tack, Renna, right. And then gets used to betray Fern. Two different pirate captains. Although I don't know if I classify Fern as a pirate captain.
As a pirate. Dread pirate Fern, yeah.
Yeah. Smee definitely seems to think she is.
Yeah.
So we finally get to the vault, and, you know, not shockingly, the droids seem to be, you know, kind of on their autopilot with the Republic emissary.
Yeah. Stupid droids.
It's just listening to Jod interact with the droids was hilarious, because it was almost like you're watching a guy talk to a computer that doesn't have a microphone.
Yeah. You are the Republic emissary. Of course I am. Oh, yeah, that was great. Yeah. And then he's like, who does he want? Oh, yeah, you must speak to the supervisor. Well, then go fetch him with some of your finest refreshments. Thank you. You know, like, that's great. It was like he's trying to talk to customer service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he's not getting anywhere.
Yeah, nothing's doing.
And as you mentioned, there are 1,139 vaults, very specific number, because it's 1138 plus one. And if you know anything about Lucasfilm, it was George Lucas's student film, THX 1138.
That's right.
And yep. That number has been used. It has been hidden as an Easter egg from the very beginning in A New Hope, it was there. Cell block 1138.
1138.
Yep. Yeah. And the THX 1138 was about a dystopian society where everything is regimented and everyone has to know their place, kind of like at Aden. So,
yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's got a lot of a little callback.
Yeah.
So we get two pretty spectacular visuals with the mint. I assume that's what it is, but that's kind of a question I've got in my head is what was that thing? Because as they're going down, you know, as the elevator, the ship elevator is going down, they pass through that giant cavern.
Oh, yeah.
With the big machine in the middle and all the stuff going on. You know, Jod makes the comment quite a, it's not show. It's quite an operation you've
yeah,
got.
Yeah, quite here. An operation, he says, yeah.
And the droid is, like, almost sounds proud of it.
Right.
You know.
He almost says that thing that the Kaminoans say to Obi-Wan when he remember like we hope you'd be pleased or something like that.
You know, oh
like,
yeah,
very
yeah.
very similar.
Yep. So I you know I think when I first saw it I just assumed that was the mint, but thinking on it, I'm not sure. I'm honestly not sure what was going on there.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if that's what a mint would look. I don't know what a, you know, old Republic mint would look like. Because that is a huge operation. And it seems like if you're just melting down metal into, you know, little ingots and stamping it, you don't need whatever the heck that was.
Unless it's like a, because they mention infinite treasure, and I'm like, well, precious metal's a finite resource. Unless that machine is like a Star Trek replicator, where you put matter in, and it makes what you want.
Yeah. Wow, and that would be a great work, right?
Yeah,
You know, a great work of the Republic. Although it's kind of funny, they're using it to make money.
Yeah, but we're in Star Trek because of replicators. They need no money because you can just make anything.
Yes, yeah. If you've ever done the actual energy to matter convergence on that, I want to say the average cup of tea is 2 or 3 stars worth of energy. To what? Replicate. Yeah, oh yeah.
So you're telling me every time, you know, the tea Earl Grey hot and it's like two or three stars worth of energy to create that? Wow.
Yes. Yeah. if you ever do the you know, the general relativity matter to energy convergence or special relativity calculations, it's like, okay, this is ridiculously wasteful. Like I can't even. So I have to assume Star Trek has some sort of limitless energy source.
Star Wars too, almost. Like, I feel like most sci-fi franchises, like, you know, defy the basic Einsteinian calculation. Yeah.
Right. We're going to get around all the problems of space travel by inventing something that's limitless. Like you're breaking the laws of thermodynamics here.
At least Stargate has the ZPMs where you can pull free energy from another universe, but even that has its consequences.
And then you know, after that, whatever the machine is, which that'd be pretty cool if it was just a matter energy transference thing. We get the vault, and I gotta say, like, I fully expected there to be like nothing in there, or it to be like a gag. Like, I wanted to see like Jod's hopes get crushed and watch that. But it was also interesting enough, just as satisfying seeing it. Like, oh my gosh! Like, there's so much money here
in just the one. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That is a lot of money.
And Jod goes up to that little stack of them and takes the one off the top and it starts falling and raining money on him.
Right. And he down. Just starts cackling. It's like
I feel like the droid should have clued in at that point. Maybe this guy.
It's so legit. Yeah.
I've never seen one of the Republic emissaries cackle as he rained money on himself. Oh, well.
It was at that point that where it's he's just addicted to money. You know, that's his whole game. He's in it for the credits, you know, and as we were talking about before, he's just wanton cruelty to the kids. This is why I really want to know his backstory. You know, this is why, because I'm convinced he's had at least some Jedi training. At least some, because
with the ease that he does the telekinetic stuff.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't seem to take him a lot of struggle. He just pops the barriers or the shackles off his hands and picks up the gun. There's no.
Right.
He's not sitting there concentrating or anything. It's just. Yeah, whatever. It's no big deal. So he's got to have some formal training of some kind.
And he can quote their aphorisms. I want to see what happened to this dude. Clearly. And we've seen how the events of the Purge have made other Jedi go bad, Balin Skull. Right. And not everybody became, Ahsoka or Cal Kestis from the video games and went off to fight the Empire. Some just decided to do their own thing, become a mercenary or a pirate. And it's when he's running down the kids and he's saying all that awful stuff to them, he says, you're all weak, spoiled, sheltered children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, is he really saying that about himself and his own past as a youngling at the temple? That the temple did not, that life did not prepare kids for the harsh realities of the galaxy and things like the Purge that would happen. I bet he's seen things, as a kid or as a young person that living that sheltered life at the temple did not prepare him for. And so that got the wheels turning in my head. I'm like, Jod, are you really just talking about yourself?
Right. There's the definite circumstantial piece to it where, he just got punched by a droid. And so he has a bad headache.
No, that is true. Right. Yeah.
And so, and he is kind of, he just managed not to die on at least one occasion, literally guy about to push the airlock button on three separate times before he gets let out. So there is all that stress there, but that kind of, a lot of times that'll bring out the real person, right? What's really lying underneath and motivating him. And I definitely felt that way about that speech. And the music during that scene and during the vault scene where he's in there was so well done to sort of play into that. This is Jod. This is the real, whatever his name actually is.
Yeah.
Silvo or Crimson Jack. This is really who he is. And I thought the music did a fantastic job. My daughter said it kind of made it very clear that he had gold fever
when he
walked into and had the spilling on him. Because you have that music in a lot of sci-fi shows gets used when the main characters come upon the alien creature's nest and it turns out to be 4,000 eggs that are going to hatch and devour the city. And it was that sort of music that sort of that impending doom creeping feeling in the back of your head kind of a music. And I thought that did a really sort of excellent job of playing into Yeah, Jod's a little bit nuts.
Yeah. If I were doing one of those YouTube videos where you edit in clips to other things from this show, when Jod walks into the vault, I would cut to that scene from that Looney Tunes skit where Bugs and Daffy tunnel their way into that treasure room. And Daffy's like, the gold is mine. Mine, you understand? Down, down, down. Go, go, go. Mine, mine, mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's definitely got that gold fever. You know, like, it's almost like he can't comprehend how much money there is in it, which just raises the question, how are you going to get... this right off the planet, you're like, yeah.
I mean, there's a point at which you're like, do you need 100 or 1,138 plus one vaults of this stuff? Like, wouldn't just a couple cartloads be enough? Like, wouldn't that set you for, you know, a couple lifetimes?
Right. It's like Thorin with the dragon horde, right? And he doesn't want to give up any of it to anybody, yeah. Even though they're like, you know, we could use a little bit of that gold to rebuild our town. And he's like, no. And and Bilbo just leaving with two little chests full of gold and silver sets him for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, you don't need much of that stuff to be independently wealthy, I think.
Yeah. But it's like, like the Mithril shirt is worth the entire Shire. Like, you could buy the Shire. Like, what? What does that even mean? Yeah. So there's, you get kind of the real Jod and then the reuniting, which was a good scene. It was good.
Yeah. I was like, how did they get there?
Right. Like, and that's like, that's a huge question in my mind. I'm like, why would the droids bring them down there?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, with Jod walking up with his lightsaber, I'm not sure what he's going to do there either. But I kind of feel like the very next scene is going to be the supervisor showing up, whoever that is. But I'm not sure what that's going to look like. So. Who do we think the supervisor is?
My working theory has been that the supervisor is Tak Rented. That he went to the planet, killed the old supervisor, took his job, and is now just retired from being a pirate, living on the planet with all this money. But I don't know. You know,
I've started to really question the timelines.
Yeah.
I don't know when we're at. And I'm trying to think if there have been tells, you know, out when they're in the wider world as to when, you know, what time frame beyond the very opening, like, blurb you get that we're in the New Republic.
Yeah.
You know, so we're prior to The Force Awakens.
Yeah. The X-Wings are still T-65 models.
Yeah.
So they haven't upgraded to the T-70 or later. So it feels like it's still in the aftermath of the Return of Jedi.
Yeah. So if that's true, like, Tak Renod found this during the Old Republic days. I think smallest timeline, you're talking 30 years. And I think it's probably more than that. And so I just have real questions about, like, how old would Tak Renod be at this point?
Yeah.
And so I'm partly wondering if he did that and now he's died and he left a droid in charge.
Right. Yeah. And also it occurs to me that, like, I think these vault planets were lost long ago because if the Republic that we see in the prequels had access to all of this, they wouldn't have needed the banking clan to keep giving them loans to fund the war.
Right.
So I feel like that the Aten and these other planets were just written off as lost, like long before Palpatine assumes power.
Yeah. Right. Because then you have the question mark of like, why was the Empire always struggling with its finances? Because, I mean, mm-hmm. with that much, you should be able to quite easily build a Death Star or two.
Right.
Like, and
or three or four, of, you know, like, yeah. yeah.
Instead of bankrupting the entire galaxy. So,
yeah.
There's a lot of questions there about how long exactly was Aten lost? And why? And I really don't know what we're going to get for Silvo, for his, if we're going to get a backstory for him.
Yeah. Oh, my biggest fear is that they'll put it in some comic book or something that I have to buy and read. You know, like,
yeah, that's, and that feels like that's probably what's going to happen. I don't know. Maybe not. I do hope they do tie up at least all of the major questions that we get. I do think there's a good chance the New Republic shows up at the very end and sort of, you know, saves the day and reunites the, you know, Aten with the wider Republic and sort of redoes their mission and all that. But yeah. Any other wild speculation we want to do?
Wild speculation.
Or anything else from the episode?
Yeah. Yeah, I think my cold is starting to get to me again. I can't think of anything.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all just in sort of stunned, you know, anticipation for the finale.
Like, yeah.
We've spent all of our wild speculating. Most of those answers have not been given yet. And so we're still sort of waiting on wings. Well, all right. That does it for this episode of The Secrets of Star Wars. We'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons, including Enrique G, Laura F, Michael S, Jackie H, and David H. Their generous donations help us to create The Secrets of Star Wars and all the shows here at StarQuest, and you can join them at sqpn.com/give. And now we'd like to hear from you, our listeners. What are your thoughts on Episode 7 of Skeleton Crew? You can let us know by sending us an email at StarWars@SQPN.com, on our social media pages, or by leaving a comment on our channel on the StarQuest Discord server, which you can find at SQPN.com/Discord. Until next time, Thomas Salerno, I almost called you Rennell. Tech rented Salerno. Thomas Salerno, thank you for joining me in the Secrets of Star Wars.
Oh, it's been great, Pat. Thank you.
Very welcome. And once again, I'm Patrick Mason. Thank you for listening to the Secrets of Star Wars on StarQuest. Yarr! Arr!
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, Vatican II in a Year. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/Vatican.